This is the D Word podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another edition of the D Word podcast. My guest this week is Todd Kites, who, after being cast into the role of carer for his parents, decided to start My Care Friends, a free resource for caregivers to connect and share information. Well, Todd, it's a pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Now, I know we could talk baseball and football forever, but on this particular edition, we're going to be talking about you and more specifically, My Care Friends. Let's start with you. I mean, since 2018, you've been primary caregiver. I mean, tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, that experience. Let's just say it's been one heck of a journey. I was living in California for many years, and then I was checking in on my mom through video, and she just wasn't doing well. And I told her and my dad, I said, look, I'm coming for a visit. Let's go for appointments. Took her to a bunch of appointments. Her health crashed within 3 weeks. And I didn't realize at the time, I thought I was coming for a visit, but she ended up being hospitalized 17 times in 22 months, which was just crazy, and everything that goes along with that. And then 3 months after that 17th hospitalization, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. And so then it was another year and a half, 2 years of radiation, chemo. So it was pretty much 24/7 caregiving for almost 4 years.
And, you know, during that time, I mean, go back to the beginning. What was available to you as a you know, thrust into this role of caregiver? I mean, what was available, if anything, to you?
Gosh, you know, there's so many people that I've come across over the past 6+ years that the same thing. They're in terms of resources, you're just thrown into a situation and you're trying to figure out what to do, how to do it. There's so many factors to consider. And whenever I had a moment to breathe, I'd ask the professional healthcare professionals, you know, is there a resource for this, a resource for that? And they didn't know or didn't have them. And so it was just sort of piecing it together.
So you started One Day, One Week, the blog, 2001, I think, if I'm correct. I mean, first question, obvious question, why a blog?
Yeah, so in 2021, I finally had some time to breathe. And I've always been a writer. I've enjoyed writing and communicating that way. So it turned out to be a very cathartic experience where I just was getting out what was going along, but there were always key takeaways for other caregivers who would read this that I could help through my journey, and that was why I did that.
And that led on, of course, to My Care Friends just over a year ago, I think. And you know, it's so important. You know, you tell us about it, I'm sure, in a minute, but it's so important to not feel alone, as you know, as you just said.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite a lonely journey, especially when you're in it 24/7, or even less. It doesn't have to be 24/7 to be all encompassing or overwhelming. So My Care Friends, right after the blog, I did a podcast that I created called Caregiving Insights, which I've now changed to be called My Care Friends Network. And My Care Friends, I started on what's called a lean canvas. I had worked with startups for years and we would do lean canvas, and it's a one-page document. What's the challenges? What are the solutions, et cetera, the value proposition. And I jotted it down and I went to a friend of mine here in Florida and I said, would you like to go on this journey with me? And she said, yes. And she's on the technical side. And we started doing it on the edge of a desk over the course of the first year, developing it and so forth. And then as I was talking about it, people were like, wow, there's no resource like this. This is great. Oh, we can't wait for this, et cetera, et cetera. And so it started to take on more speed and a life of its own. And then I brought in two other friends that I had been a part of my previous startup. And then another person that I had met on a hiking trail in Colorado, who is now our vice president of programming and community, Katie. And yeah, and here we are, as you mentioned, just a little over a year in existence.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, a great journey. I suppose it equates a little bit to a station we're talking on, UK Health Radio. Our CEO, Johan, will tell you that, you know, in his words, just over 10 years ago, he started this with three listeners on a wonky website, as he calls it. Now it's turned, obviously, to 1.4 million listeners a month. So it's amazing what you can achieve with the right drive and the right idea. Tell us a little bit, you know, bit of the nuts and bolts. How does it work, Mike Air Friends?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Mike Air Friends started out as a platform for caregivers and advocates, and certainly anybody can go on and communicate and learn and so forth. It's a community, an online community, a la Facebook, where people can go in, make care friends, other friends that are caregivers, patient advocates. They can directly communicate with each other, or they can post in groups. There are over 70 groups. They're both caregiving advocacy related, but also personal interest related, because caregivers need to escape that world and they don't always want to be talking about that. So they can go on and talk about automobiles or movies or art, but they also have the more significant or serious topics like patient advocacy, legal aspects of it, medical research. Alzheimer's and dementia is another group on there. They can go in and post questions to the community, and the community then can answer and so forth. That's how it was launched. It quickly morphed into a much bigger endeavor. We did a program, a regional law firm here in the US asked us to do a program on how employers support their caregiving employees. And we did it, they loved it. And that then a light bulb went off, went, let's create programming that can help. So we are involved in all different programming. We have programs. We just finished the initial part of Caregiving Youth, which is they're hidden in plain sight. So we did that collaboratively. We doing a program on Alzheimer's and dementia, which is really exciting. We've got one on women and autoimmune diseases with people from around the world. So we've got that. We've also got a mindfulness area on the site where we haven't officially announced it yet, but now that we're doing this, people will hear about it. It's we've partnered with a mindfulness teacher in Australia. She's awesome. She's known around the world, and she's on our site now, and members can access her meditations for free. We also have news, we have events, and so forth. So there's a lot. I could obviously talk about this for hours.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Plenty of great guests lined up on the podcast until the end of the year, but still a couple of spots left. So if you'd like to tell me your story or chat about a dementia-related project, just drop an email to tdwradio@gmail.com. This week, I'm chatting to Todd Kite, founder of Mike Air Friends. You know, I think I want to draw some things out of that. One of the important things, I think, is that carers are recognised as people, not just carers. So therefore, as you quite rightly said, they do want to talk about other things as well. And it's, you know, it's good to be able to escape from that 24/7 bubble that you find yourself in.
Absolutely. Having been through that 24/7 caregiving role, and a caveat there, well, not a caveat, it was in the midst, a part of it was in the midst of the beginning of COVID. So the craziness with that, I had my parents on two separate sides of the house because they each were immunocompromised, because they were each going through things. So it got pretty lonely because I was doing everything. That's where the idea really was sparked for My Care Friends, because I needed outlets and to communicate and to people who understood, because you can go to friends and they're well-intentioned and well-meaning and they're like, oh yeah, I understand. Or, oh yeah. But it's impossible to understand unless you're in those shoes.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true of, you know, any form of medical condition, really. You know, unless you have actually gone through it, you can empathize, which is great, but you don't actually know the full story. I mean, you said at the beginning, the challenges, one of the challenges has got to be there are 53 million caregivers in the US, if I've got my figures right.
Yeah, that's the figure, the most recent figure that's out there. I'm sure it's more. Probably significantly more, because a lot of people don't identify as a caregiver. They just think of it as they're just helping their parent or they're helping their spouse. They don't think of themselves as caregivers.
Yeah, and that's a big issue worldwide. And I guess also, you know, you're doing a lot, I know, with young carers. I was speaking to somebody fairly recently whose father was diagnosed with early onset dementia when he was 12. And he was saying how difficult it is that suddenly you're cast into this role and you've got so much going on in your life as well. You're going through puberty and all the things associated with being a teenager. That figure, 53 million, I think it's 10.6 million in the UK. I don't think a lot of people actually cotton on to the fact that that will include a lot of young people.
It does. And the number here, as you mentioned, 5.4 million, that's significantly undercounted. And that's because here, they just haven't done a great job of identifying them. The UK is definitely much better at looking at that topic. They're on it. There are dozens and dozens of organizations that focus on caregiving youth. We have one in the US that's focused on caregiving youth, which is called the American Association of Caregiving Youth. I happen to be on their National Advisory Council, which I'm thrilled to be a part of and helping them out. But there are other organizations that will do a program here, a program there about it, but there are no other organizations specifically toward that. So, but it's definitely undercounted, because you think about kids are just, they're trying to live their life and they're just pulled in, you know, mom or dad is sick. And especially those who are in underserved communities, they don't have the wherewithal to bring in anybody. So the kids are put in a position where they're taking care of their parent or even helping with, helping with a sibling. So if you have parents that have to be there, they have to work, one, two, three jobs just to keep a roof over their head, the kids then have to help out their siblings. And so they miss school, they can't play with their friends as much, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it's a significant problem around the world.
Talking of, we're a relatively small country geographically, population-wise about 65 million. You are obviously a much larger country geographically. That's got to pose a lot of problems with different communities, The way you are, you've got different states who look at things in different ways, different legislature. That's got to make things really difficult for you.
It's true. That's both whether it's related to caregiving youth or caregiving in general. Overall, there's over the past year or two, there's been some legislation passed that specifically talks about caregiving and caregiving youth, which is great. But that is just the beginning. There's a real long way to go. So organizations like American Association of Caregiving Youth, our organization, My Care Friends, we want to bring that to light more and more. It's a challenge for sure.
And it's a challenging year here in the UK, because obviously we had our election in the UK and we only had actually one major party, or the Liberal Democrats, who actually mentioned the words carers, as we call them, or caregivers. I know you over the Atlantic. We had one major party that actually mentioned that word in their manifesto. Don't you prejudge the result of the election, but what's the feeling? Is anybody there, Republicans, Democrats, mentioning the words carers?
There are. There's some bipartisan legislation that's introduced, that's been further introduced that is bipartisan. I can't speak to the rest of the Republicans or the Democrats. It's hard to know. In my opinion, it's not spoken about enough overall. So, and here, sadly, it's not in the top five, and maybe not even in the top 10 of what voters think about, which is really strange when you think about it, because you're either a caregiver, you're going to need a caregiver, or you have somebody who needs caregiving. So it in my opinion, it should be much higher on the list of concerns, also because it really cuts at the fabric of society. I mean, everybody either knows someone who's sick, cares for somebody who's sick, or is going to be sick.
You know, we have the problem here, certainly, the people bring economics into it. And if you do bring economics into it, if every carer in the UK decided today, that's it, I've had enough, then our NHS would collapse at that very moment. And yet you see a lot of the budgetary responsibility, a lot of the quotes that come out from our politicians that don't actually mention those billions of pounds, and obviously dollars in your case, that carers actually save the whole, as you said, fabric of society.
It does. There's a program that My Care Friends did earlier this year. It was called Caregiving, the Trickle-Down Effect. And there's a trickle-down effect. And the trickle-down effect that we were really focusing on were the relationships, which are the fabric of society. It's the fabric of communities. It's the fabric of families. And so there's such a challenge when, you have an individual. If you have a spouse that is caring for a parent and needs to take all that time, or you have a partner, that makes the relationship that much more challenging. So that is the fabric of America. That's the fabric of the UK. It's the fabric of anywhere, is the ability to stay connected. And so if we're not supporting those caregivers, and I'm not just talking financially, certainly financially is important and helpful, but if we're not supporting them with legislation, we're not supporting them with community resources that are specifically geared toward them, if hospital systems, healthcare clinics, if they're not focused, and they are to an extent, greater or lesser, depending upon it. But if all that is not there, you're not looking holistically, that's where the breakdown happens.
Yeah, is that holistic picture? But I guess for caregivers, carers, it's actually even just as we've been saying here, it's kind of battering that door down so you're even in the discussion, which still seems to be something that needs doing.
Yeah, it does. It's the discussion. It's like any topic, Pete, we know it's the importance is having the discussion. If you don't have the discussion, it doesn't go away. It's there. It's just you're not dealing with it. And so you have to have those discussions. It has to be dealt with. And even just having the conversation, even if the legislation's not moving forward, even if you're not getting the financial resources on a community level, if you're having the discussions, that's raising the awareness, which helps people galvanize. It helps galvanize people to come together, and it helps communities and, you know, and nations overall.
Yeah, you know, it kind of strikes me that, you know, with our politicians, it would be great if they just dropped into your network and my care friends and saw what caregivers were talking about. Because I'm a great one. We used to have a program here many years ago on the TV, which we called Back to the Floor. And what it was chief executives of companies went to the very lowest level of their organization. So the chief executive of McDonald's in the UK was flipping burgers for a day. And I can remember the guy turned around and said, you know what, I've learned more in this day than I do sitting in a boardroom for a year. And surely the same thing would apply if people just looked at what caregivers are talking about.
Yeah, that's a great point. And there was a program here similar, which we probably got from the UK, because often that happens, and where a CEO would go in and put on a mustache and put on a wig or whatever and go in and flip burgers or do whatever. They learn things that they would not have known. And I believe for the best leaders, that they either have had to come up through the ranks so they understand, or they have the willingness to go and see what is experienced like that. And so related to caregiving, absolutely. If people could go and just be a caregiver for one day, what they would see and what they would learn, and they'd have a different level of appreciation and understanding for what their friends, family, and colleagues go through.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On UK Health Radio, we cover every aspect of health every week, with over 41 shows available for listen again and download from the website www.ukhealthradio.com. I'm talking caregivers this week with my guest, Todd Guides. I think, immediately after COVID, and I had carers here that said to me, because we had lockdowns, they couldn't go out, they were stuck in the house or whatever. It was almost welcome to my world for a time because, I had a couple of carers said to me, well, now those people out there know what I feel like. But again, the world turns. COVID is, now accepted, like getting the flu or whatever, generally. And that seems to have been lost again. I felt there was a bit of momentum there, but it seems to have been lost again, sadly.
Yeah, I agree, Pete. And you may feel the same way as I do. When you have those kind of things that happen, people do come together and there's a different understanding. Well, to an extent they come together. Certainly it's pushed a lot of the US apart in ways. But people have a different level of understanding. When you're losing friends and family, no matter, politics aside, no matter where you stand on that, you have a different level of understanding. It's hard not to. It's similar to when 9/11 happened here. The country came together. Didn't matter what color you were, what religion you were, what political party you were. People come together. That's where the hope, I think, stems for everybody in the world, because we all want very similar things. And we're all connected. And that's, I could get on my soapbox and talk about this for hours. But with COVID, I agree. There's a lot that came together and there's a lot of people who then understood, wow, I didn't realize that this is what about, how hard this was. And I think a lot of things, at least here, have boomeranged and gone back to, and sometimes further apart. It's sad, but I do believe the politicians have a lot to do with that.
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm sure we could have a joint soapbox, actually, so we won't go so much into that. One thing, though, with, Mike Efrens and the whole caregiver thing is that I think in certain respects, what happens is people whose loved ones have got dementia or cancer or whatever tend to be boxed up sometimes and don't realise that there are a lot of commonality. If you take the condition out, which I know is difficult, but the role has a lot of commonalities. And it is very powerful to talk to someone who's a caregiver, no matter who they are caregiving for or what they are caregiving for.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You make a good point. So no matter what the condition is that you're of the person you're caring for, certainly there are going to be things you can learn best from caregivers that are caring for somebody with dementia or Alzheimer's or somebody with cancer, or somebody with scleroderma, whatever it might be, because there are some nuances that you just can't learn from other caregivers. But when you look at it overall, caregivers, there's so many overlapping topics, just like you pointed out before, isolation. So how do you care for yourself with that? So what's the self-care? How can you do self-care? What are the legal aspects that you have to be looking, the documentation? That is agnostic to any kind of condition. They're all things that you need to consider and keep in mind as a caregiver. Yeah, there's a lot to be learned for sure.
And I think that's why I applaud what you're doing, because the more caregivers get together as a group, the bigger that group gets and the bigger voice it's going to have, hopefully, to be heard as well. I think one of the important things, I was talking to someone else the other week who said that it's very important as a caregiver to realise you cannot be perfect. You're going to make mistakes. You know, hey, we all make mistakes. So, you know, if you try and be perfect, that's the first road to burnout.
Yeah, I have identified with that. That was a challenge for me at the beginning of the journey with my mom and my dad. I think part is to understand where that perfection comes from. Where the desire or the need to be perfect comes from. I mean, essentially, you have somebody's life in your hands in many ways. So that drive for perfection is you don't want to fail them. You want to provide everything, which isn't just about providing the physical help that they need. It's about advocating for them. You want to be on top of it. At least I do. You want to be on top of everything. You want to make sure that you're making the calls, you're following up, you're moving things forward. But often caregivers, and I've been guilty of that, especially early on, is I felt I was the one and I knew it. And I was the only one who knew this and knew how to do it. Because when you're wrapped up in it, to let go of that is really hard, and to let others in and that others can do it. They may do certain things in a different way, or perhaps they won't do it to the extent that you did it. But the question is, where is it detrimental? Is it detrimental that you just won't give the reins at all? And then you are suffering and you have a challenge for your own well-being, or that somebody may not provide, the glass of orange juice, or may not be able, not be there the same exact way, or is that better? Yeah, that's an important thing and a real challenge it can be for folks. And over time, I hope I've gotten better with that. I think I have. I guess we'll have to ask the people around me.
Well, we all learn, don't we? And hopefully we get better through that learning experience. Almost time up, but one thing I did want to touch on is looking at one of your YouTube things from a couple of years ago, actually. It said the importance of comedy and humour in caregiving. Sometimes people shy away from using comedy and humour when you're dealing with serious conditions. but it is a really important area.
It is, and I'm glad you noticed that episode. That was with a friend of mine, Steve Ziegler, in Philadelphia. We met in an elevator in Philadelphia, and we've known each other for a long time now. And he has produced comedy shows, and we've gotten to talking about comedy and caregiving and the importance of that. And it's you're spot on. It's people, you can be, and understandably, people can be really serious about things because there's lives at stake. But interjecting humor just lets out it. You need that release, and that's what laughter is. That's what comedy is. It's about letting that out, letting the toxic energy out from it, and laughing. And it's about laughing at the absurdities of situations. And so, I agree. It's really important. I think in many cases, the Brits do a better job because British humor is just, I love British humor. So, being a Monty Python fan my whole life. So it's something that we do pretty good here. But bottom line is, however the humor shows up for you, as long as it's not at the expense of people, then it's a positive thing.
Yeah, I think so. I spent 2 years of my life in rooms with people living with dementia, and I heard some of the best one-liners I have ever heard. And, every day I miss them, actually, because it's so full of humour. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you as my guest. We will talk again, I'm sure, and I know we'll keep in touch. Good luck to the Phillies. Hope they get in the World Series, and I hope Arsenal do well as well. And we'll have our joint sporting adventures will be positive. But thanks so much for being my guest.
Thanks so much, Pete. I appreciate the time. It's great talking with you always, and best to you and Arsenal as well.
Thanks to Todd. Always a pleasure to chat to him. And you can find out all you need to know about Mike Air Friends at mikeairfriends.com. Well, that's all for this edition of the podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for more Dementia Talk here on The D Word.